God should have given you to God when you were born.
Pray. Pray. For the last time. Pray.
Welcome back to Chronologically. This is the podcast where we go through some of cinema's greatest creators' full filmographies in chronological order. My name is Jeff, and over there, that's Eric.
Hey, Jeff, how's it going?
Going well, man. You ready for a new season?
I was just going to ask you the same thing. I'm super ready. I am super ready for a new season. I'm beyond amped for this. Like,
I am ridiculously excited because all of our movies are taking place in the 70s and 80s. Which is like my favorite era of movies. I love it.
Yeah, and while we are going to be doing, there's a theme that runs through this. We are going to actually be seeing a bunch of movies by a bunch of different filmmakers, right? It's not just one director. We're going to be branching out. We're going to have different director every week and a different vibe every week because, you know, we're focusing on films based on the novels and writings, short stories too, I guess, of Stephen King. So It's huge. It's a huge difference. It's a paradigm shift for our show, and I'm really excited for it.
It's a bit of hyperbole, but with us this week, we have a special guest who was featured on our Village episode, as well as if you listen to the Hitchcock episodes, which I know Eric has not. She was on The Birds and Marnie. Welcome back, Tessa.
Hi.
Hi, so, Tessa. I reached out to you. I said, it was last time you recorded. I said, well, here's what we're doing next season. Pick a movie. And you picked Carrie.
I did.
From, what did we do? 1976, directed by Brian De Palma and starring Sissy Spacek as well as Piper Laurie and John Travolta.
I was surprised with John Travolta, and I don't know why, because I've definitely seen Carrie before. Like, I don't know why John Travolta surprised me, but it had been a long time since I'd seen Carrie, the 1976 version.
Yeah, I forgot he was in it, too, and I'd seen it before. So let's dive into our history. You said you've seen it before. You got any stories around the history of your relationship with Carrie?
Yeah, so actually, I didn't see the 1976 one until after I had watched the 2002 made for TV movie and the 2013 remake. So
is the 13 one the Chloe Grace Moretz one?
Yes.
Okay.
And actually, well, no, I think the 2013 is my least favorite, but this one wasn't my favorite either. Like, I liked the 2002 movie one, and I think I watched it when I was a little bit too young. Because it definitely, I think, scarred me. I was like, oh, my God. Like, maybe I related too much to Carrie. And I was like, I'm going to kill my entire prom. Like, I don't know.
I didn't know there was a 2002. And I'm going to, I don't know if we have it on our list, Eric, but.
We do.
Okay. Because I know we have the one with Chloe Grace Moretz on there, but. So what about you, Eric?
So I think I'm the only one who was like alive when this came out, right? So
yeah.
my history with Carrie goes back first to the book. And I'll tell you this, when I was a kid, my mom had this book. I think my grandma had given it to her, and it was in her closet. And on the cover was the picture of Sissy Spacek covered in blood. And I knew nothing about the story or anything, but when I was real little, I would sneak into the closet and look at that book for the thrill of terror it would give me. Just that image of her with the blood. Like, I had no idea, like, if she had no skin. Like, I had no idea what was going on in the picture, but it was terrifying. Terrifying enough that it would draw me back to look at it. So then, as I got older, I started engaging with the books of Stephen King. Again, my grandma was the gateway. My grandma was like my book dealer, right? So she was always slipping me these books that I was too young for. And so I had read the book several times, I think, before before ever watching the film. And then I probably watched the film first on VHS. Like, I probably just picked it up from, you know, Blockbuster or whatever and watched it that way. And then I've probably seen it three or four times over the years, but not so much that I didn't have it conflated in my mind with the other versions. Like, I and with the book. Like, at the end of this movie, I fully expected her to go walking through town, blowing shit up with her mind. Like, 100%, I thought she was out there, like, exploding cars and burning down the town. And she doesn't. Like, yeah. She totally doesn't do that in this movie. And I guess it's just because there are so many versions kind of mashed up in my head, that, you know, it's been long enough that I kind of got them a little confused. That said, I do think that if I were picking, and I haven't seen the 2002 TV movie version yet, so that'll be new to me. But out of the ones that I have seen, and that includes Carrie 2 The Rage, this is probably my favorite. I think out of them, I really like this one a lot.
Yeah, so this, I think, is my third viewing. I saw this when I was much younger. Again, Hitchcock fan, like Psycho, specifically Psycho being my favorite movie of all time. And I watched this and just couldn't help but feel like this is, he's taken so much from Hitch. You know, the violin, ring, ring, is like right out of Psycho. There's the whole thing with the knife above the head. I know that's probably been done.
Well, it is literally right out of Psycho. They used the Psycho soundtrack like that he had hired.
Oh, is it?
It is literally the Psycho soundtrack. Yeah. He hired the guy who wrote, and when I say he, I'm talking Brian De Palma here. He hired the guy that wrote the Psycho soundtrack to do the soundtrack.
Herman Bernard?
Yeah.
Yep.
Herman died before it was time to write this.
Oh, no.
And so he hired secondary guy to do it, but the budget was running out and they were just like, Psycho? Yeah, okay. And they literally lifted the Psycho soundtrack.
We'll do it. It's fine. It
like, there's other orchestral stuff, but when you hear that freak, freak, which frequently happens throughout the movie, it is literally the Psycho soundtrack.
Great, which makes me happy. Back then, I was like, this is ripping it off. And then I come to find out later through listening to podcasts and watching more and more movies, learning more about Brian De Palma, and finding out that he is this huge Hitchcock head. And he has a lot of movies that, like, Dressed to Kill is one that fits a really similar idea to Psycho with a cross-dressing lead or killer. And then they have this huge sequence at the end. We'll get to Brian De Palma chronologically at some point.
Kathleen,
it is on the
Kathleen
list.
Kathleen Turner in that one? Is that Kathleen Turner, Dressed to Kill?
I don't think that one's Kathleen Turner.
All right, my bad.
But anyway, it's good stuff. But so my second time watching it, I would say my first time I was kind of lukewarm, and then I watched it the second time. I'm like, you know what, this is good. This is I started realizing, like, the first time I watched it, who was in on the prank and who wasn't. And before, I just thought the whole school was against her, with a handful of people actually being nice. But watching it this time, I'm like, really, it's these four douchebags, right, mm-hmm. that are against her, you know, that set up this whole thing.
It's mob mentality.
And there's really this, because I think the first time I watched it, Tommy, I think, is the blonde guy.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, I thought he was in on it, but I watched it this time. I'm like, no, he's a really good dude. Like, you know, and so this third time watching it, I think it might be one of my favorite movies of all time now. Like, it's just grown on me so much.
Wow.
I watch it this time. I'm like, this is so good. But that's a spoiler for the end, I guess. But yeah, I think I love this movie now.
I certainly love the hair.
the hair.
Tommy's hair. Okay.
I love Tommy's hair.
It's insane.
The most amazing 1970s hair, I think, ever. So Tommy went on, I don't know if you guys are familiar with The Greatest American Hero. It was a show. Yes. It was the show in the 80s. And Tommy went on to be the greatest American hero about this hapless dude who finds this super suit and can't pull it off. Like, just sucks at being a superhero. That hair. Oh my God. The hair. It's like an eagle sitting on his head, you know. it is glorious, to the point where I'm like, sometimes, like, it can't be real, like, it has to be a wig. It's so just, you just want to touch it and kind of run your hands through it a little bit and kind of pet Tommy. I don't know, like, maybe I'm saying too much about my feelings.
You're not.
Towards
I
Tommy's
agree.
Hair
100%. Tommy, I got a man crush on him. Not just the character, I think the actor's great, and the hair cannot be overstated.
Well, Tommy seems like he's, like, amused by everything the entire film. Like, he's almost, like, sitting back and, like, watching it play out with this, like, not a smirk, but more just like, oh, this shit is kind of cracking me up. Like, when they're in getting lectured by the gym teacher, he just, like, he's constantly kind of pushing this smile back down inside himself because he just thinks the whole thing is so ridiculous. He's like, why are we making a big deal out of any of this? And that's his vibe the entire film. You know, he's just kind of got this, like, vaguely, passively amused thing. Like, he's a little bit above it all. He's kind of, like, apart from it all, and he's just along for the ride.
This version of Tommy was my favorite Tommy of the three Tommies that I've seen. This one was my favorite because he just seemed so genuine.
I agree, and I think, like, he's got such an interesting arc because I think he's always a good guy. Mm-hmm. Like, they try to fake you out where he's like, you're stupid or something like that, but I think in that moment in the classroom, he's talking about himself. He's saying that to himself, not about Carrie.
Oh, I thought he was saying about the teacher.
I thought he was saying about the teacher, too. Yeah.
Okay, that might be, too. But I think the first time I watched it, I thought he was saying it about Carrie, and that kind of threw me into the idea that he was in on this and all that. But through subsequent watches, I realized he's just being a genuine kind of guy. But I think his arc is really interesting because, like you said, he does kind of stand back, and he's just, like, going with the flow until the date.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think he gets really invested in Carrie having a great day.
Yeah.
I think so, too. So one thing I'm not really clear on from this, and it's been a while since I read the book or seen the other versions. How close is Sue's relationship with Tommy? Like, is this her
Very
boyfriend?
Close. This is, like, her boyfriend.
This is her boyfriend. So she's asking her boyfriend to take this other girl to the prom.
It's like her first intimate partner too, because, like, when you read the book, they are like, they're each other's first, like,
okay,
because it kind of goes into, like, a bunch of different things, but, like, they're very serious partners or boyfriend girlfriend,
because it's a pretty shaky thing that she does. Like, I don't mean shaky in that it's risky to her, right? Mm-hmm. To ask her boyfriend to go with this other girl to prom. And then, like, I don't know. I was going to ask you guys, like, do you think that Tommy is actually, like, develops over the course of the evening some, like, feelings for Carrie? Like, it's not just about, like, him making sure she's having a good time. Do you think there's, like, love? I wrote it with a lot of O's, love, between the two of them. Because that whole scene where they're dancing and it's spinning, and it's, like, a way overdone effect, but it spins.
I thought that, too.
Faster and faster and faster.
He's getting,
like,
nauseous.
At one point, I was like, God, dude, are you trying, like, to make people hurl in the,
please?
In the theater? But I took it to, like, my interpretation of it was that it was their feelings for each other kind of, like, spinning out of control. Like, they're both being, like, kind of, like, wrapped up in this moment, in this thing, you know? And if the movie, like, stopped right there, we would have
a rom-com.
She's all that with the psychic, you know, in a nicer single parent. Like, it's the same fucking plot almost, you know?
Yeah.
But, you know, obviously it doesn't stop right there. But I wanted to hear what you guys' take on Tommy's feelings for her. Like, she's obviously, like, just agog with the whole thing. But how do you think he is in that moment?
I think he, I felt like he stepped into the damsel in distress hero. Like, he took his, like, I'm gonna make, like, I think he took it very seriously. Like, I don't know. I mean, I'm not a guy, obviously, but I, like, I feel like there's that hero mentality of where, like, oh, I need to help her. Like, you know, she's this, this, like, helpless little, like, you know, bird that needs, like, saving or whatever. And I feel like he stepped into that very easily. But I also, like, I don't know if, like, his feelings for Sue, like, propelled him to be like, I'm going to do this as best I can because I love Sue, or, because it has been a long time since I've read the book. I just remember a couple of parts from it because I read it when I was, like, 14. But I think that the, I think he got into, like, the, I'm a knight in shining armor, kind of, not in a bad way, not in like a, look at me, look what I'm doing. I think it was more like a, like, oh, this is my role. I'm a good guy, and I'm going to be a good guy. Cause I think he was, like, when he stood up to, like, when he said that the teacher sucked, I think that was them showing us, like, oh, he actually has, like, a good guy mentality.
He kisses her. He kisses Carrie.
Oh, yeah. That was so glossed over, too. It was so weird.
Well, so there's a couple kisses. There's the one where they're dancing, which is a romantic kiss.
For sure.
Like, there's the one when they win, and it's a kiss on the cheek, and actually his girlfriend is there to see it. His real girlfriend, Sue. Sue, right?
Sue.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, is there, and she sees it, and she's fine with it. Like, she's really happy that this plan has come off. But there is that romantic kiss, which in this movie, he's, what, 16, 17? They're graduating, so he's 17. Hormones are raging. You know, he probably was into that kiss a lot, like, just because I think maybe he got swept away. I do think his intentions are still really good. And I agree with you, Tess. He did step into a sort of protector role. And I think he saw how much it meant to her. I think he's a person who is street smart. He's really good at interpreting people's feelings and reacting accordingly. Like, the way he gets her to finally agree to go to the prom with him is really well done. Like, he's kind but assertive, and, you know, knows that it's something you really want. You really want this. Like, come on, you know. And I just, Tommy is the hero of the movie for sure. But I don't know that he develops any real feelings for her romantically. I think, again, he's 17 and horny, so the kiss probably was pretty genuine. But I think that he, in my mind, the way I look at Tommy and how he is held in my regard is he's still very much there for Sue, doing this for Sue. Maybe he got a little carried away. It's all right. But I just got to believe that he's as good of a guy as I think he is.
Yeah, I think, like, in the end, like, the plan, setting aside the bucket of pig blood, the plan is fundamentally flawed. And of course it is a plan put together by 16 or 17 year old kids, but at the end of this, somebody's getting their feelings hurt regardless.
Oh yeah.
Right? Like, it's a dumb thing to do. You know, like, yes, you can give her this one perfect night, but then at the end, Tommy goes back to being with Sue. Right.
Right.
And, yeah, and, or Tommy goes off with Carrie and then Sue's left alone. Less likely, but possible. So I don't know.
I think I want to say, I think that while Carrie is kind of gaga for him, but I don't know that it's him specifically.
Yeah.
I think it's just this situation.
Experience,
right?
Yeah.
Right. And he is a handsome guy and all that, you know, but it's this situation that has got her gaga. So I think that her breaking out, her, you know, rebelling against her mother, her getting lipstick, her dressing up, making her own dress, and having self-confidence, I think, in my mind, again, in a perfect world, this would be the what she needs to kind of break away and actually become herself and be confident. And although this is prom, so, you know, they're probably pretty close to going into their adult lives, that, you know, her life would change from this point mm-hmm. in a lot of ways. I would think it'd be the catalyst for her to, the real good thing is her rebelling against her mother.
Right? Yeah. The actual villain. I mean, the kids right. are the villain, but the mom is the, you know, I think I was trying to think of like, if I wanted to rewrite this as like a feel good teen, like thing, like my greatest ending would be Carrie joining the group of her and Sue and Tommy and being friends, and then them trying to help her out of her situation with her mom in that was that Jesus statue haunted? I'm so confused.
No, that thing is so creepy.
It is the creepiest. It is
like the light up eyes.
Yeah.
Like there's like one LED in there that just stays
like,
on
all the time. Like I was like, if I ever like, if you wanted to make it like a teen, like feel good movie, like that's what would happen. They would, and she would have her own design company and she would go to college. I don't know. I just was like, yeah.
And make dresses and.
But even like my romantic brain, I'm like, she wouldn't have ended up with Tommy. Like her, Tommy and Sue would have still been together, but Carrie would have found her own, forged her own path.
Carrie is like Quasimodo in the Hunchback of Notre Dame
movie. Yes.
It always bugs me in the
conventionally
Hunchback of Notre
beautiful
Dame movie.
Quasimodo.
Esmeralda ends up with the other dude in Quasimodo's like, all right, gargoyles,
like,
we're
going
to hang out by ourselves some more, but thanks, we're slightly happier.
Yeah, that is kind of, I think
he gets his own.
It would still
end.
Hurt, but I think like her even having friends who aren't her mother.
Yeah. Oh my God.
Is still pretty good. Right. Mm-hmm. And being able to be a normal person for a while, because I think at the end of the day they would be like, you need to call the cops on your mother.
Yeah.
And I think that would take a long time for her to get there though. And I think, let's say the bucket of blood doesn't spill and she goes home happy, her mom's still there going to try and kill her.
Oh yeah.
Right. And so I think that the ending's still the same, but all the people live at the prom. She just, you know, takes her mom down with her. Like that whole sequence is still the same.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Maybe she wanted to collapse the house because, I mean, like, I think that she has a lot of guilt at this point because she has wiped out, you know, 100 of her fellow students.
Her entire graduating class.
So we're all agreed, like, John Travolta killing a pig with a sledgehammer, that kind of makes him a villain, right? And
right.
And RoboCop.
Just so he can get a blowjob.
And RoboCop
arguably
is
the worst
villain.
Death. Sure, I skipped over the pig part because I was like, I'm not watching this. I will watch her murder all of her peers, but I am not watching a pig death.
Yeah. It's the dog rule. Like, I've seen Kickboxer 1,000 times, but when the dog gets shot with an arrow, I'm like, this is not right.
It's not right.
This is
So RoboCop girlfriend is a villain, right?
Nancy Allen playing Chris.
Yes. And the mom, Piper Laurie, obviously is a villain.
Clearly. Did you see the girl with the hat?
Oh, the girl with the hat is like,
I made a note of the girl with the hat because I was like, oh, she is the villain. She is a villain too.
She is a villain too.
But I was cracking up because of the hat.
The guy who wanted to do the votes, he's a villain. Like, they're the four people that orchestrated this.
Right. Did you notice when they're doing the jumping jacks that, like, her whole outfit is red and everybody else's is black, the girl with the hat. And when she's sitting under the hair dryers, her hat is on top of the hair dryer. Like,
I did not notice that. Oh my God.
That's awesome.
Okay, so those people are obviously villains. So the challenging question I have for you guys now is Carrie a villain?
No.
No. I think so much of her abilities are involuntary until the end. Like, I think that when she's throwing knives at her mom with her mind, that's the time I think where she's actually in control. Right.
Mm-hmm.
But so much of the stuff, like the light popping and the kid falling over on the bike and all of this, just
that kid's a villain too.
It's almost like she thinks of it and it happens. Like, she definitely goes catatonic, right?
Yeah.
When the blood hits. So is she the villain? I think for some people, for sure. Like, there's a lot of innocent people that die there, some of which were very much in favor of her. But she also has a mental illness where when the blood falls on her, all the people who are kind to her, all she hears are negative things. They're laughing at her, right? Even the gym teacher who's been her friend from the beginning mm-hmm. is laughing at her. She's really not, but that's what Carrie sees. So there's like a mental illness there. So if someone has a mental illness that causes them to hurt someone, are they bad? You know, I mean, those are kind of the questions I would ask. But I think in general, when she's in her right mind, Carrie is very good and very kind. And the fact that she turns out as good as she does in the household she's in is quite amazing.
Yeah, I've never taken this film as Carrie is a bad guy ever, or the book. But I read this on Reddit this morning, and I was kind of like dumbstruck by it. And whoever this Reddit user is, I would credit them, but they've deleted their accounts. It just says unknown Reddit user. Mm. Says, controversial take, but one could really switch Carrie's telekinesis with the firearm in their minds and view this as a school shooter scenario.
Oh, shit.
It essentially is in many ways. Dude,
I mean,
that's a legit point of view, right? She
murders. That's a post-Columbine world.
Her entire class. Like, she kills everyone at the prom, right? And then, you know, picks off a couple more. And in the book, goes out and just, like, wipes out the town. Blah, blah, blah. You know, like, she's just, like,
she
just explodes everything, right? Like, she kills everybody. So, I mean, obviously, an extreme take, but she's a pretty extreme character, right?
Yes.
Like at the end, when they push her over the brink, she is like way over the brink, right? Like, she mm-hmm. doesn't just take down a couple of the kids that fucked with her. She's like sinking the Titanic with everybody on it, you know? So with that in mind, again, I ask, is Carrie a villain?
No. I think she is a resourceful girl.
She's resourceful.
So I would say this, that's in the eye of the beholder, right? Like, if, I mean, she murdered a lot of innocent people. There were a lot of people there. Like, even when Tommy's friend, his date, is like, hey, come sit with us, come sit down. She's kind and, oh, I love your dress. You know, those are all, most of the people in that room are really pretty nice, right? There's the handful, although most of the girls in her class were part of the whole traumatic event in the locker room. But you know, the rest of them are, and there's a lot of teachers there, although the principal dying we're kind of on board with because he can't say Carrie.
Cassie.
But yeah, I kept saying Cassie. So I mean,
is that an offense worth killing over?
Yes.
Yes. Yeah, for sure. He didn't even try.
he didn't try.
He got corrected so many times. It's like if someone corrects you with their pronouns and you consistently don't do it, that's what's offensive, right? Like, I've talked to people who I've misspoken and I'm just like, I apologize. You know, just give me a chance to reprogram my brain. And if I do it again, I'm not meaning an offense. He's not doing that.
No.
He's just like not even listening. If anything, he's sexist. He's not even listening to the woman's like, no, Carrie. It's Carrie, you idiot. You know?
Well, he's minimizing her. Right. She's been through a traumatic thing.
Probably not. But in the realm of the film, I'm fine with it, right? And in the realm of the film, Carrie's not the villain. But she is almost closer to like a storm or something that happens because of negligence, right? You know, mm-hmm. like your actions have caused this to happen. Now, she's responsible for her own actions, but none of this would have happened if Chris had just been like, shit, I'll just crash the prom. That'll be fine. Like, I mean,
right.
She's just so spoiled that she kind of had to do it her way. So in the realm of the film, I don't think she's the villain. In real life, she would be a villain, right?
Yeah, I guess. As a bullied teen girl.
I was bullied as well.
Yeah.
And had she just killed off the four douchebags we'd be in a very different conversation.
And the teacher and the principal.
Right.
But yeah.
Like the gym teacher is kind to her throughout. That's the only person right. the gym teacher is kind to, because she tends to physically abuse the other members of her class.
Shit out.
Like there's so much like abuse that's just like totally normal. Like John Travolta, what's she call him, a dumb shit or something?
Dumb shit smacks him. One of my notes was, there is so much superb smacking in this movie. These people just smack the shit out of each other all the time. It's like expected behavior. I love, like, they're having this argument, he just reaches over and backhands her, and then they just go on with the conversation.
They keep going.
Yeah, like,
and she keeps calling him dumb shit,
and he does it again. He smacks her again, and then they just keep going again, and then the next thing you know, blowjobs. Like,
right,
it's wild. It's wild the way that their dynamic works. And the gym teacher smacking the shit out of what's her name.
I was here for that, though.
Oh,
I was
yeah
here for that
for sure. Yeah, and zero repercussions. That's the 1970s for you. My we were telling my kids the other day how, you know, the there used to be paddles in school. Like, there was paddling, and like, if you would mess up in school, you get beat with this paddle. And like, it was totally just an accepted thing that when you send your kid to school, they're going to beat your kid if they fuck up. Mm-hmm. Right. And like, we had this dude who would walk through our lunchroom with his paddle. And if you like kind of stood up out of your seat to grab something and he happened to be behind you, wham, hit you with that paddle.
Jeez.
And we were like in third grade.
Oh my god.
So 1970s. Yeah. Like, yeah, her smacking the shit out of that kid. That, yeah, she would get zero repercussions for that. In fourth grade, I saw my teacher pick up a kid and literally throw him down the hall.
Jeez. So you're older than us. So did you have to shower?
No.
In high school?
No, okay. There were showers.
Yeah.
And it seemed, the vibe was that the showers had recently been retired.
Yeah.
And the showers still worked. Like, I wrestled my freshman year, and after wrestling practice, some of the guys would go in there and shower. But no, we didn't have to shower after gym class. Thank God.
Yeah, because my mom had told me stories about that, and I just can't, like, the way this opening scene, everyone is nonchalantly naked.
Well, when I went to college, there were still communal showers. Like, we had a big open room in my dorm that just had four spigots in it, and everybody showered in there. And it was weird at first, but you do get used to it. You're just like, man, okay. we all know each other. We're going to just hang out naked in this room and take our shower.
I took summer school gym, so I wouldn't have to change in front of people. Like, I had to change in front of people in like seventh and eighth grade, and I took summer gym, or no, fifth and sixth grade and on, but I took summer gym so that I wouldn't have to change in front of people, because I was so,
I didn't want to do it either. Yeah. And fortunately, our showers were encouraged, but not mandatory, which meant no one did them.
Right.
But I just was like, no, hell no.
I will say the locker room was like the great equalizer in, I mean, not equalizer. It was a no man's land where rules did not apply.
Oh, yeah.
Because like, there was no supervision in there at all. And you could fully get your ass beat in the locker room and nothing would happen. These guys beat the shit out of a friend of mine in the locker room one day. Aww. Just because he beat them at like badminton or some shit.
Jesus. Like,
it was definitely Lord of the Flies in there for sure, even though the nakedness was restricted to underwear levels. So
yeah. Speaking of which, how do we feel about the fact that these characters are 17 and the camera's going through the locker room? Now, the actresses, I imagine, have to be 18 at least. But I was like, wait a minute, this is a high school locker room.
Yeah. I made a
Didn't
note. I was like, oh, see, yeah. I was like, oh, this was definitely directed by, like, this. I was like, oh, these scenes were made for men. Like, this was a man moment. Sorry, guys, I'm not to be like that, but
Brian De Palma, 100%, is kind of, while I like a lot of his works, his movies are
lecherous,
very male gazey, right?
Yeah.
It's very much like, let's get some nudity on here, you know, and so I can't disagree with that. I do think it does kind of, with that music and just the, it kind of almost sets you in the real world to a degree, like mm-hmm. that sort of haunting music. And then they're actually in the nude, like it kind of almost made it feel more realistic, I think, to say that. Now, like, I think the only one that really probably needed to be in the nude was Carrie, because she's literally in the shower and you have to, you know, the period is such a huge part of the story. And she is naked in that scene. And I think it's done not sexually, but it's just kind of, nudity in films always is weird to me, because I'm like, did that person actually okay with this, or were they pressured into it?
You know,
and did the story actually need it? And I think there are certainly times where you can argue that. And I think Carrie being in the nude makes sense for the scene she's in.
I think they could have got around it, you know, but
I think there's a lot of shots of, like, you know, up to the thigh, and really you probably don't need to see that. But when she's running around with her hands bleeding, she's cowering in the shower. I think there is something visceral about that that does work on a art level, where I don't think it's just strictly titillation. So, but feel free to disagree. There are times, and especially in Brian De Palma's movies, where it's just there for, you know, the guys.
I think it the prep work of getting up to when she starts her period took a long time. Like, I think, like,
that's fair.
Like, it was like, I was like, okay, we know what's gonna happen. Like, just do it. Like, why are you? And like, just like, I don't know. She was moving very slowly, and like, there was no sense it before the period thing, and then the period happened and it went crazy. But like, it was all like very like slow and not. And I'm like, well, if you're thinking about it, it's for like a, it's before class, so you're going to get to your next class. Like, you're moving quickly. Like, it's not like a long sensual hot shower. There's probably not a ton of hot water. Like, it's, you know. So I was like, okay, come on, let's go. Like, yeah. Get to it. Like,
that's completely fair.
let's get to the trauma.
Yeah. Like, yeah.
So obviously, you know, super 1970s massive nudity Brian De Palma situation. Man, what a fucked up scene it is. Like, afterwards, I was like, man, this is a really messed up way to begin a movie.
Right?
Like, and I think so messed up. Like,
when I was younger, I was like, man, this is fucked. Like, I just, and we're going to get to another King film where I didn't like it the first time. And I really honestly haven't watched it since. We'll get to it when we get there. But at this one, I think that was part of why I was like, I don't know that I like this, because it was so dark. Nobody really wins. It's just kind of horrible. And I think part of the reason I didn't like it is just because this is such a horrible start to a movie.
It is massively traumatic. Like, yeah. And now, you know, like, the first time I experienced this story, I was a teenager and I was going, like, oh, that was fucked up. But now as an adult, I'm like, wow. Like, you know, what happens to these girls as punishment isn't enough. Like the gym teacher has it right. Like, we should go above and beyond in fucking these girls up, because like, what they do is wild, yeah. You know, like, having this kid in a corner and pelting her, and, you know, like, it's a mess. It's just a mess. And like, in that way, you can see why Sue would kind of make this decision to do something that was maybe not in her own best interest.
Yeah,
you know?
I'm kind of wondering when that light switched for her, because even in the scene, she's still laughing and part of it. And I don't really notice a moment where you actually see her go, I've made a mistake, let me fix this. What would have been probably a better choice is to go up to Carrie and say, I did that to you, I apologize. And then I think her strangely enough, I think her going to her boyfriend and saying, go ask her out, is a way to keep her own popularity intact.
Mm.
She doesn't want to be associated with Carrie still, you know. I appreciate the gesture, but I think it would have been better had you apologized and then try to be her friend and tell Chris to suck eggs, you know, like, would have been a more human response, but she kind of went about it a different way.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like you don't see that turn. All you get is her mother, who, by the way, is her real life mother, playing her mother in the movie. Saying, oh, you know, Sue's a good girl, you know, and then all of a sudden she's just doing this thing. There are definitely like some missing pieces of the puzzle here.
So I was thinking about this before because I, again, didn't notice it, but I was wondering if when Carrie's mom is in their house and she sees how shitty Carrie's mom is, that she's like, oh, like I'm punching down, which is obvious you were doing anyway, but maybe there's a little... You know,
this is why she is the way she is.
Realization, hey, my mom's awesome and you don't get the same benefit. And I don't know. I kind of wish there was a little more explaining how she kind of got to a repentant state as opposed to what we got.
Yeah.
Yeah. It is quite a stretch. Like, okay, so you guys said that you were bullied. I was also bullied. As a kid,
I think everyone was bullied.
But then, you know, I followed the pattern and I bullied other kids too, you know, like I was a dick to people just as much as people were dicks to me. And when I had that realization of what a dick I had been, and at some points people actively pointed it out to me, like I was being really mean to this kid in my Boy Scout troop, just calling him every sort of name and like taunting, and we were playing baseball and I was just screaming horrible shit at him, and another kid turned around to me and was like, do you have any idea what you're doing to him, you asshole? And I was just like, oh. But when I did have that realization, I just stopped. Like, there was no apology. There was also no repentant, like, I'm going to take extra action to make this person feel better. I just stopped, right? And that's as far as my moral compass took me in that situation, you know? So, I do feel like there's a piece of the motivation with Sue here kind of missing, you know, whatever it is that would push her kind of towards making this grand gesture, you know, and trying to give Carrie this, you know, perfect day at possibly her own expense. Because, like, I think that to me, it feels like the natural progression of regret and remorse wouldn't carry you that far. Like, I think it would just be more internalized shame and beating up on yourself in private as opposed to, like, doing this big thing.
And
but
just
maybe,
ignoring,
like,
the
her mom is so good that she has the self-confidence and awareness to make that change.
That could be, too.
Yeah. Maybe,
you know, like, I think that the question of the parents, the parenting is a big thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, so.
Oh, sorry.
We haven't really gotten too much into the mom.
Oh God.
And her situation, Piper Laurie, and her wild red hair, like
the breakout performance in the movie.
Yeah, she is really something else, isn't she? Like, when she does go visit Sue's mom, you get the impression that this is like a thing. Like, the neighborhood knows. Like, she's the local.
Oh, God. She's like, she gets on the phone. She goes, yeah, Margaret White is here. And
you know what that
means,
Betty.
Yeah. Like, give me a minute. Hold on. Like,
I'd like to contribute $10. What I do like about that scene is that, in all honesty, Margaret White is completely sincere. Mm-hmm. In what she's doing. She is not in it for the money. She believes every bit of what she says. And so when she gets that $10, she looks at her with disdain, like, this isn't what I came here for.
I came
but
for
I
your soul.
This little
you
box for you to put it in.
And change, right? Like, that's, you know, and I think that's what makes her so interesting, is that she, is trying to do what she thinks best in the most misguided and evil way. She doesn't know how to teach her kid otherwise. And she is so, and I'd love to see a movie about her childhood. But she is so into her cult-like belief that it is her identity. And when I think when Carrie has her period and she comes home and says, like, if you weren't sinning, you wouldn't have had this. Like, she believes
yeah,
that.
Oh, yeah.
And, which is ridiculous because the world would end. Like, because if nobody has their period, then no babies are born and then we're all doomed.
Well, but, and she, like, and I'm like, I know you had to, you cut, because obviously you had, you got pregnant. So you were having a normal-ish period at some point because you got, you know.
Right.
And
she
then
knows.
Did you just like take everything out when you had the baby? Like, there's only a couple ways those stop, and it's not because of like just willing it to stop. Like,
so I'm wondering like if she was abused or like some sort of shame around sexuality has been put into her, probably from a religious upbringing, but she takes it so much further than
far. Yeah, there's definitely like a replacement of sexual desire with religious fervor going on there. You know, like she is definitely substituting one for the other there. And it's interesting, you don't get any sense of, oh, they belong to a church.
No.
Or, oh, they belong to a cult. Or
you
anything.
Get very much the sense that mom is her own church.
Yeah. Exactly. She is a cult of one, right? And she has one cult member, and it's Carrie.
Yeah.
And she's an unwilling cult member at that. And so I think somebody like living like that, slowly going insane in isolation, you know, they could kind of put any interpretation that they want onto the Bible. And a lot of that stuff that she's like throwing around isn't even from the Bible. It's just made up hokum that she just like spouts at her daughter. But yeah, it is really fascinating. So the statue in the closet is not Jesus, actually. It is Saint Sebastian.
I looked up
Saint Sebastian and what his deal is.
Oh God.
And Saint Sebastian was this dude in about the 3rd century AD, right? And he was a Christian. Okay. And of course, as it played out in those times, he was wandering around talking about his Christian beliefs, and whatever king was near him was like, no to that. Okay. We're gonna tie you to this tree and these dudes are gonna shoot you with all these arrows, right?
Oh.
So they shot him with all these arrows, and that's how he's portrayed in most of like the big Renaissance oil paintings and stuff. There are all these images and statues and stuff of him with all these arrows in him. But then he didn't die. Like, somebody else came along and they nursed him back to health. He lived through the arrows, and that's the miracle, you know, of Saint Sebastian.
Okay.
And
is
then
he a martyr?
He went right back to the king again, and the king was like in a parade or something, and dude was by the side of the road being like, ah, but about Jesus, you don't know anything, dude. And the king was like, all right, this time we're killing him with hammers. And so they beat the shit out of him and killed him with hammers. And that was the end of Saint Sebastian. But the way that Saint Sebastian is portrayed in a lot of these images is that he's having this kind of rapture during the pain of the arrows being slung at him, right? If you watch the mom when she's getting penetrated by these knives and shit, and the potato peeler and all that other stuff is going into her.
It's like a chisel at one point.
She is into it.
She is into it.
They are penetrating her, and she is like real excited about it. And if you kind of look at the way she ends up like strung up.
That was a little more on the nose. That,
oh, yeah.
I noticed.
She is crucified. Yeah.
It's the same as the statue. And she's got the things in more or less the same position as the statue.
Yeah.
And she's stuck to the wall and Carrie's trying to get her off. She's like stuck to the wall. Oh,
did you hear the suction?
Yeah, that like.
That I would have rather that not been there in such a tense moment to hear a.
Yeah.
I guess the way they filmed that is pretty cool because it's a pretty good effect for the time. They actually had the knives and stuff like in her on strings and then they pulled them out of her and then reversed the film.
Okay.
Oh, nice.
Flying into her, which is a pretty,
that's pretty,
pretty
good
way to do it. Yeah. But yeah, so I think that there's some weird, like, I don't want to say sexuality to the moment where she's getting stabbed with knives, but kind of
you
some
used
sexuality.
The word penetrated.
Yeah, I did on purpose for a reason. Like, I think that, like, she is getting, you know, like maybe this is just the ultimate. This is the ultimate for
she's
her.
She's a masochist.
You know?
Yeah,
she is being martyred, and she's having this fabulous rapture in the pain and, you know, whatever else that means to her in her weird religious sexual twisted mind.
But not when she was conceiving Carrie or when she originally had sex with her Ralph. Yeah.
Well, you get the feeling like he maybe forced his way on her a little more. Like it wasn't complete. Like I think she got into it.
Yeah.
And which is why she kind of blames herself a bit, but you get the way she tells the story anyway, because we only get her perspective, is very much, and she does seem like the type to blame someone else for her own actions, but is that he came in the room and
was drunk,
got hot and heavy with her, which could have been, you know, I don't know, but it's she's the standout character too, like just she is the catalyst for everything that happens. And my favorite part is when Carrie comes home, goes up the stairs, and you can see Mom behind the door. And then she showers and comes out, and you don't see Mom behind the door anymore. It's excellent. Like, it's one of those chilling horror movie moments that I adore.
That is a great shot, because for the longest, I didn't notice her standing there behind that door. Like, my eyes took in the I don't know, mannequin or whatever it is, the sewing dummy. And then I didn't even see her next to it. And then I finally noticed her and I was like, shit, has she just been there? And like, I had to rewind for a second. And it was like, oh, she really was. Like, she was just kind of under the lights and the lights come up just a bit, you know?
That was my experience the second time I watched the film. Whereas like, I didn't notice her until they zoom in. You're like, oh no, you know? And then when she flips the lights on in the bathroom and it illuminates her face. Just excellent stuff.
Oh,
just,
yeah.
So good.
For sure. When you guys, how did you watch this time?
In the nude.
Excellent. No, I mean, like, did you stream it? Did you rent a DVD?
Yeah.
Like, what service is what I'm asking?
Max. HBO Max. Yeah.
Okay, so I did too. When the boys are going to try on their tuxedos, did you have this weird moment where it like sped up and then slowed back?
I think that's in the movie.
Is that in the movie? Because that is some weird shit. Because
I remember when that happened this time, or at least it happened in the version I watched before.
Okay.
Like, I think that's, and it is a weird thing. It's almost like, hey, our movie's 30 seconds too long. Can we fast forward? And it was so silly because it was this light piece of comedy. It was your comic relief of them getting their tuxedos, and I don't like the ruffles, and I love that scene. Mm-hmm. I wish we could have got the whole thing, but that fast forwarding was really weird.
It was strange.
Yeah, there were a few moments like that in the movie, but this was the most egregious, like weird stylistic choices. You know, the first time it goes split screen, I was kind of like, what the fuck? Like, what? what is going on here?
You know. That's a Brian De Palma signature.
Is it?
He loves that. Oh, yeah. If we ever get to do it, you'll see it, that thing where it's not even really split screen, or at least it's not. It's trying to have this effect of focusing on something in the foreground and the background. Mm-hmm. And so it's, at least if that's the scene you're talking about, like with Tommy in the classroom and you can see Carrie behind him and they're both in focus, that's something he loves.
Gotcha. Yeah, definitely unexpected for me, even having seen it before, you know, it's been long enough that I forgot that that was in there. And so I was kind of like, oh, you know, I don't know. But, man, that scene where the pig blood comes down on her and just the way she kind of like transforms and like she kind of like she's moving in this weird way through while she's, I mean, I don't want to compare her to, I'm nobody can see me doing this on a podcast, but I'm kind of moving like that woman from The Ring. And that's not what she does, but she definitely, like, her physicality changes. She kind of goes stiff and like
very robotic,
so wide, and you know, it's killing time. I don't know, it's so good. It's such an amazing performance. Like, you can see why Sissy Spacek was nominated for an Oscar for this. Like, if just phenomenal.
And her mom was too, right? She got the supporting nod.
That could be. Yeah,
I think so.
Yeah.
One thing in that scene that I notice is when Tommy gets hit by the bucket and knocked out. Like, I wonder what is going on in Carrie's mind. Is Carrie, like, now additionally pissed off because you hurt Tommy? Or does she think Tommy's in on it? You know, like, I don't know.
Yeah, you don't know. Tommy's killed, right? Like, that kills Tommy.
Yeah, it does.
He's dead there. No, I don't know that that kills Tommy.
In
but
the book,
he dies
in
the fire, at least.
Yeah, I think in the book it kills him. Or
I think it does, too. I think the book, it kills him. I always thought it was the bucket that took him out. And I think you see when he gets hit with the bucket, her face jerks to look at him as he, like, falls down. But I don't remember if she hallucinated him laughing or not. Like, I can't.
Yeah, I don't think she did. So my hope is that she has nothing but good thoughts about Tommy.
Mine too.
Yeah.
Mine too.
Yeah, and then when Chris and Travolta try to run her down. And
that was so bonkers to me because, she, like, Chris goes from teenage prank to murder.
Oh, right. Straight. Yeah. She's like, do it. Calm down,
tries
Chris.
To run her down. And even, like, Travolta's like, whoa, this is kind of a lot for me right now.
Yeah, like, Slaps McGee Travolta was like, hey, maybe not. Like,
yeah.
Spacek's, like, physicality in that moment is really great, too. She just, like, she almost looks like some sort of monster the way she kind of turns and jerks and, like, you know, flips him over. I read that Nancy Allen and Travolta both kind of thought during the filming that they were actually the comic relief in the movie. Like, they didn't realize what villains they were until they saw the final cut of the movie. And then they were like, oh, we're really bad. Like,
oh, we're the bad guys.
Because they're both just so bumbly and, you know, goofball-y and, like, their shitty little fights and so on. Like, they thought that they were playing comedy, you know. Piper Laurie also, like, thought that she was in a black comedy. Like, she didn't necessarily understand the tone of the thing, which is so interesting. Like, you know, like, when people are filming movies, like, I think you just don't know. I mean, you clearly don't know whether it's going to be good or not until they get done with the edit, right? Like, right. Like, you might have some inkling of, like, oh, this guy doesn't really know what he's doing, or this is kind of a disaster, it's a bit of a shit show. But, I mean, that could also be saved in the editing, right? But, like, it's like the way they take movie clips and they put different music over the top of them and completely change the tone of them.
Yeah.
If anyone's ever seen those trailers,
yeah.
Like, you know, Halloween is a comedy, or, you know, So I Married an Axe Murderer as a horror film, or whatever, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Notably, Hitchcock and the screenwriter for Psycho hated the movie until Herman Bernard's score was layered on top. Then, like, oh, okay. Like,
that works.
Hitchcock is quoted to say, Herman, you saved my movie, you know. So,
right.
Definitely on board.
Yeah,
they did
just
that
changes,
with Elf. They
changes
changed
so
the
much.
They changed the editing and the music to make Elf a horror.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
Or it was like Home Alone or something.
It's interesting that you can go through the entire filming of a film and not even know the tone of the film that you're in until you see it cut together. And then realize, like, oh, I'm actually the bad guy. And
like, oh.
Really, really, really bad.
Ooh.
Kind of cool. Did you guys know the bit of trivia about the trials for this, like the acting tryouts for this?
No.
They were held simultaneously, like, in the same place at the same time for Star Wars.
Oh.
Like, when people came in to try out for this film, they were trying out for this and Star Wars at the same time. Like, Lucas and De Palma had group auditions.
Interesting.
So, Amy Irving was almost cast as Princess Leia, and William Catt was in the running for Luke Skywalker.
Oh, hell yeah. And you imagine Tommy Skywalker?
Good, right?
With that hair?
And vice versa. Because,
arguably be better movie.
You know, all these people were intertwined at the time, right? And another interesting piece of trivia is that De Palma asked Spielberg to come hang out on the set, quote, because there are a lot of cute girls around here. Spielberg came and hung out and met Amy Irving, and they got married. They were married for 4 years. After Spielberg met her on the set of Carrie. And
interesting.
And De Palma ended up married to RoboCop for like five or six years.
Oh, okay. Allen,
yeah. I'm sorry I keep calling her RoboCop. I just can't remember.
That's all you remember. She's been in other films.
But RoboCop. Like, sure, she's been in other films, but RoboCop. Like, come on. Like, once you're in RoboCop, does anything else you've ever done matter? Like, you're in RoboCop. Like,
she was in Carrie.
But also RoboCop.
I would argue that Carrie is more of a classic than RoboCop.
I would really take you to... we would have a
good luck
conversation about that. What, RoboCop,
you can't even find
RoboCop.
A rated R cut.
Wait, okay, so now you guys have to prepare, and I can be the judge. I'll be the judge. You guys prepare why RoboCop is more of a classic, why Carrie is more of a classic, and I'll be the judge. You just let me know.
Okay.
All right.
That's fine.
We'll look at doing that.
In between seasons, Verhoeven chronologically. So.
Oh, we're doing Peter Verhoeven.
Yeah.
There's a podcast idea. Like, which is more iconic?
I wanted to talk.
I don't know if I want
to
argue
very,
all the time.
Very briefly, because since this is our first episode of Stephen King chronologically, right? I don't know how much you guys have like read Stephen King versus watching the movies.
None.
Really?
I have read zero books.
Oh my gosh. Okay. This is a good thing for us because I've read almost all of the books.
Like, oh, dang.
I can list the ones that I haven't read like on one hand, you know, like,
oh, wow.
I've read almost all of them. How about you, Tessa?
I've read several. I've read Carrie. I've read, I've read several of them. The thinner yeah. Where he eats or he can't eat or something like that. I don't like the way Stephen King writes women.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Yeah, I don't like the way he writes women, so I don't read a lot of him. But I've read a couple.
Okay, so how do you feel about the way he wrote women in this?
I don't like it.
Like, across the board, like everybody? Or is there like specific, like are there specific characters that you take umbrage with, or the actions, or just the way he...
I think I'm looking more at the movie now because it's been so long since I've read the book. But, he just, like, he was very, like, the way he talked about Carrie in the book, he was like, yep, she's a homely girl. Like, she's, like, this is why, she's made fun of or whatever. And it just kind of, like, irked me because, like, you know, a lot of girls at 16 are homely girls. Like, you only get the really, that's such an awkward stage. And he was very unforgiving of her in describing her. And I felt like that was mean because she already had this like shit life, and then you just have to describe her as the worst possible way. And then anytime he describes like women, I don't know so much in the new stuff, but like it was very stereotypical, like how a man describes a woman. Like she looks in the mirror and her breasts were perky, and you know, it's just very like,
what does mom call them in this? Fun pillows or
dirty pillows.
Dirty pillows.
Dirty pillows.
Dirty
yeah.
pillows. Yeah, thank
your
you.
Dirty pillows are showing. But I feel like he just kind of uses women as like a plot point and not really like a well thought out character.
Oh, like in It went the orgy?
Yeah.
Oh, like, we'll get there. We'll get there.
Like, what was the point of that?
That's your expertise. I've never read it, but I've heard that that's quite stunning of a turn in the book.
It is a jaw dropper. It's really something.
It's like, oh, crap.
I'm going to have to, like, as I move forward with my Stephen King reading, kind of focus on that a little more and try to pay attention and notice it. I think like everybody, he's probably gone through a maturation process and, you know, like has moved forward with the culture like everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it'd be interesting to kind of see if there's an evolution as we move forward, you know.
Yeah, this is 50-something years ago.
You know? I'd be interested to see, you know, what he, like, how he changed or whatever. But, because that would be really interesting, because I was just like, ugh, this is, like, off-putting. Like, and then the thing that always gets me with, like, she was described so horribly in this book, but then the movies, the actresses that they all get to play Carrie are conventionally beautiful. Like,
right. Which I think, and I haven't seen the other ones, but I have seen enough of the Chloe Grace Moretz one where I think they did a good job on this one, making her not ugly, but definitely making her hair kind of drab, and plus Sissy Spacek has really stunning features, mm-hmm. like her eyes and everything and her freckles and all that. Like, they did a good job of, like, even though Sissy's pretty, they did a great job of making it seem like I can understand why she gets picked on. Right.
Yeah.
Her dress, her outfits are sort of Amish in nature, you know, and that sort of thing. But then I watch like the opening with Chloe Grace Moretz, and I'm like, this kid would not be unpopular.
Right.
She's all
I don't
that.
Understand.
It's the she's all it's that. A, yeah. Dude, yeah. I'm telling you, it's
have
100%.
You seen,
like,
but in this, they did a good job. Like, I can see this character being unpopular.
Yeah. Have you seen a Cinderella story? Have you seen with Hilary Duff? I watch that. Uh-huh. I watch it like quarterly because it's a feel good. But it's Hilary Duff, and like trying to convince me that anyone has made fun of Hilary Duff ever, the way she looked in that movie, like, it's just beyond belief. Like, there's no way.
That's like the line. Did you guys see Barbie? The line where, like, you know, I feel ugly or whatever, and then there's the narrator goes, "Note to self: maybe cast someone other than Margot Robbie for this part."
Right.
You know, and that self awareness really just because you are in the. I'm watching the movie. I'm like, come on,
right?
You know, and then the movie, like, all right, just ignore that fact and listen to the message. So I agree, but
The reason I'm bringing up Stephen King and like the extended works of Stephen King is because having read all the books, I am aware that Stephen King has this thing for psychic kids. Like, psychic kids are a recurring theme, right? And this is our first psychic kid. And so I'm going to call her our Jean Grey, right?
Okay.
And so what I'm proposing as we move forward is that when we encounter psychic kids, we discuss whether or not we should let them on our team of Stephen King X-Men, because okay. I feel like we could have a full X-Men team by the time we get done, even with this first season, you know, and we can talk about the pros and cons of their psychic powers and whether
or not even just telekinesis, but if one of the kids shoots lasers out of their eyes, we can make him our Cyclops.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
And because the only one that comes to the mind right now is the Firestarter.
Right. We don't have to have them be like analogs to the existing X-Men. We can just make our own Stephen King
your own X-Men
team. But but Carrie, I think, obviously is the first X-Man to come out of, because I mean, it just fits so well, you know, puberty and the onset of her mutant powers, and you know, like,
no, you're right,
it's very very X-Men-y, very X-Men-y. And so I feel like as we move forward, you know, and I think we'll be surprised by how many X-Men we end up with.
Oh, yeah. Fair you're going to have a ton.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I want to formally invite you back for all of our Carrie films, Tessa, if you're willing.
Sure.
But if you're sick of them, that's fine, too. But I asked you this last time, but I don't know if things have changed. Do you have anything you want to pitch or talk about?
Oh, like, am I doing anything with my life?
Yeah. The shit. No, not that. Wow. I meant like that you want to share with people. And if not, cool.
Are you okay? Hold on. I am so sorry. You're going to have to be a little more specific with me. Do you
have any projects?
Oh, okay. I thought you meant like opinions about the movie. And I was like,
I thought we were done.
Because I was like, I could talk about misogyny more, but like, I don't know if you want this.
I wouldn't care.
We can.
So I'm actually hoping this is going to be a little more developed by the time I could come back for another Carrie thing.
Well, you got plenty of time.
Right? But I am working on writing my own crochet patterns.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. And so I currently have my TikTok, which is I Crochet My Feelings. And it's the same across like my TikTok and my Instagram. So come find me on there. But that's where I plan on posting when I start actually like publishing my crochet patterns, which have nothing to do with Stephen King. But I was thinking of while I was watching Carrie making a Carrie possum.
I'm here for that.
And so that might be a thing that may be happening. I don't know. I am working on writing my own crochet patterns. So
that's excellent. And excellent. I also want to say, don't think that you can only come back for Carrie. If there are other things, take a look at the filmography. And if there are other things that you're interested in coming back.
Well, okay, listen.
Of course, always welcome.
It scared the shit out of me as a child. Like I was
the OG.
The OG, like Tim Curry. I was already scared of clowns. Like I don't like clowns. The miniseries, it's a miniseries, right? Like it's like a,
yeah, right.
It's not like a movie or anything like that. Yeah, that came out and I was like, oh, this is it. Like this is how I'm gonna die, is by a clown in the sewer. And so I would love to, as an adult, come back for that if that was a sure. thing, if I could do that.
Absolutely.
Yes, that sounds like a winner.
Okay, cool.
I will add you on the spreadsheet. Sweet.
And so, Jeff, what do we have coming up next?
Well, next for us, we are going to watch a miniseries.
Yes.
But it's actually the cut I saw, the one that's available to rent, looks like it's all just one movie. It's like 3 hours and something long. It's Salem's Lot from the 70s. And then this will be our last piece of the 70s. And then we'll move into the 80s proper with The Shining and all of that garbage. I can't wait for The Shining because I have only the movie I was talking about is The Shining. I've only seen it once and I did not like it. And I've never watched it again. So maybe it'll grow on me. But yeah, we're going to watch Salem's Lot next. And we're just going to do it in one episode. There are some like the It that you're talking about. We're going to do two parts.
Okay.
So we'll watch the first part, talk about it, second part, and
I'm so
all of
excited.
That. So,
all of my miniseries dreams are coming.
Yeah, you and your miniseries. Wait till the last season of King.
Oh, yeah, because they did the, didn't they do the dome? When the dome?
Oh, that's too much. That's that.
Oh,
that
okay.
Would, yeah,
you're not.
We had, so maybe we should talk a little bit about some of the rules that we set out. So, we're doing all the theatrical releases.
Okay.
Spinoffs like The Children of the Corn 2 through 9, maybe as like bonus episodes.
I've been trying to get Elliot to watch those, The Children of the Corn. He's like, I'm not doing it.
Oh, he's well, on our. Well, we've already put him in.
He's going to be our bonus episode, Children of the Corn
Guy. So
we made him the Children of the Corn Kid. He's our corn kid.
Oh,
he's our corn
kid. My God. Okay, so I'm going to go yell at him.
I don't know if
he's
aware, but he's doing that.
I'm dead. Okay.
So, and then like certain self-contained miniseries we're going to do, but then there are like whole TV series like Under
right.
the Dome that went on for like 3 seasons.
Yeah.
That's too much. Like
okay,
we can't
okay.
do that. Like Lycie's Story where it's 1 8-episode season. Yes, okay. We can do that. Shows that go on for seasons on end, like, yeah, we had to say.
That's just too much to cover.
It's too much, and, yeah. It's already
and generally
enormous.
Speaking, we only require ourselves to do, major motion pictures or even, like, independent ones if we can find them. But miniseries and television series have always sort of been on the outside.
Yeah.
But this guy has so much you can't ignore.
Right.
That we are going to do.
Yeah, they're landmarks. Like, a lot of these miniseries are landmarks, like The It,
Oh,
like, that's a landmark miniseries.
Permanently
The Langoliers. Like, everybody knows that.
Altered my
brain
chemistry.
The First Stand, yeah, so much. So, yeah, I'm super excited. I think this is going to be so much fun.
That's
so
cool.
Thrilled that we're doing this.
Yeah, well, if you want to get in touch with us, too bad. no, you can find us on Twitter at some sort of handle. I don't know. It'll probably change, but you can find me on Twitter at Podcast by Jeff. You can find Eric on Twitter at Eric_Hotter. You can check out GamingNexus.com for all your gaming review needs. Also check out my other podcast called The Movie Draft House. I think that's it.
All the episodes can be found at chronologically.net, right?
Yes.
And we are Chronologically Podcast on Facebook.
There you have it. So we'll see you in 2 weeks for Salem's Lot.